the House Committee on Veterans Affairs for March 15th. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for being here. And first up, if you'll read the bill, will be House Bill 3500 for public hearing. And I will go ahead and read the bill and I'll open the public hearing.
House Bill 3500 directs the Oregon Military Department to report to legislative committees on military cultural barriers to successful reintegration and recommend legislation for eliminating the barriers by October 1st, 2014.
Okay, I'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3500.
First of all, we have...
You're supposed to have had Senator Boquist here, and he just walked in the door. What a timely guy. And then Jim and Director Willis, would you come up as well?
I'll let you get to my right.
All right. Thank you.
Welcome, Senator.
Mr. Chair, how are you?
Brian Frog's here today.
Is that right? Well, we got them all here. For the record, I'm Senator Brian Boquist. I was asked to make a couple of brief comments on House Bill 3500, which, you know, continues this really, Mr. Chairman, co-chairs, colleagues, down the road of overcoming the barriers that we have to reintegration and overcoming some of the barriers we have here in the state. And, you know, 3500, as I look at it, is for the most part kind of an insurance policy. I think as I look up at the committee members, I know some of you have served. You know what happens when the war comes to an end at times and things fall by the wayside. And sometime out in the future, probably before January 1, 2015, you know, things are going to change. And what we need to do is continue to focus on our veterans as we go down that road. This isn't anything rocket scientist. Military Department is doing a good job of it now. Veterans Administration is doing a good job of it now. but it is our insurance policy as legislators to ensure we take care of veterans beyond when we are here and beyond when the front page of the news carries the word Iraq or Afghanistan or some other place we've sent our veterans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Director Willis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. You have my written testimony, so I'll be brief. The issue here has to do with people who are struggling as a result of their service, and we want it to be okay for them to seek help. The Task Force on Reintegration continued to hear stories of our service members who weren't reporting for a number of reasons, and the reasons are important to list. They were afraid of losing their job. They didn't want to let the team down. They did not want to be seen as weak. They were concerned about peer pressure from others who experienced the same events but were not struggling with the challenges of serving in combat. And they were concerned about their direct supervisors who would not support them if they did self-identify. At the Department of Defense, and certainly through the Office of the Secretary of Defense and the Joint Chiefs, there's a clear understanding that it's okay to seek assistance. What happens, though, in military units, especially at the company grade and below, are some company grade officers and senior enlisted are not offering the support to these individuals that the Reintegration Task Force believed that they needed to receive. So there needs to be a full commitment up and down all the chains of command to individuals who are seeking assistance for challenges incurred by their service to our country. And this bill asks that that be addressed, and I believe it's good legislation, and I thank the committee for an opportunity to comment on it. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director Willis. And by the way, I must say, I've never met anyone that's been in combat that didn't struggle with it.
I concur with that, Mr. Chair.
Any questions, comments? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Doherty, are you here to 3500? What you are involved with?
Love to speak to it. We went from fourth to first.
Last should be first, Mr. Chairman.
Received the best for last, Representative.
Thank you very much. Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Esquivel, members of committee, I'm proud today to have the opportunity to bring House Bill 3500 to you. This bill, as you know, comes in the recommendation of the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Reintegration. And we all agree on the importance and urgencies of the challenges facing our new veterans, what we refer to as our modern veterans, as they return home. Afghanistan and Iraq is now the longest war in American history. We have an imperative to take care of our men and women as they return home. Excuse me. The task force reported that as many as 40% of the returning Iraq and Afghanistan veterans have some level of post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, depression, or other emotional and mental conditions. 50% of the 41st, when they returned, the 41st is in my area, and I tried to find them jobs. I handed out 150 flyers to businesses in Washington County, but they came home without jobs. if reintegration fails, it affects not just veterans, but it affects their families, it affects their communities. Many become homeless. Suicide is the number one cause of death amongst Oregon veterans ages 18 to 24. We have seen the unfortunate examples of tragic interactions between veterans and law enforcement due to violent behavior frequently tied with untreated or unacknowledged mental health conditions. The good news is in light of all of this, that the Oregon Military Department is working on these issues and working very well. This bill will keep this issue in the forefront of the minds of us as legislators as well as the citizens of Oregon. This bill asks the military department to continually report to the legislature and to come to us with legislative suggestions. This ensures that the concerns continue to receive the attention that they deserve. By passing House Bill 3500, we can ensure that the needs of this distinguished group of men and women remain at the top of our priorities as we move forward. I urge the committee to send House Bill 3500 to the floor with a DuPlass recommendation, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Representative. Okay. Any questions, comments?
Thank you for your time.
Anyone else wishing to speak on this? General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, apologize for not signing up. I was busy in a conversation back there on something else, and I just didn't get the job done. We support House Bill 3500. I want to make sure you all understand that. We have, I think, a very robust... For the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, so make sure that we get on the record that we support the bill. We have a very robust reintegration team. We were a little slow getting out of the blocks when we first started deploying soldiers, and we didn't know what we didn't know. We learned quickly. We came to this body and our governor at the time and requested monies that weren't available through the federal government to start our reintegration team. We've had great, I think, integration with the other departments of the state, particularly the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I would put our reintegration team up against any in the nation right now. In fact, I know you've all gotten this through your offices, but I'll publicly announce that our semi-annual reintegration summit is this Thursday. It starts at the Anderson Readiness Center at 8:30 in the morning. We'd love to have you all come down. Anybody that can get away between 8:30 and 1:30. That's how long it lasts, and it's all the partners that we have, and usually it's about 75 or 100 people are there to work with us and what we can do better. We're constantly trying to improve this process. So this is a good measure to keep it in front of everybody and also for us to keep our eye on the ball, and we'll continue to do that to take care of our soldiers and the veterans that are being created every day. So with that, I'll let you get back to your work.
Thank you, General. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you, General.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3500, open up a public hearing and work session on SCR 1. We have, would you read the resolution, please?
Yes.
SCR 1 congratulates the USSS Ranger Foundation and supports it, supporters on preliminary approval for the USS Ranger to be moored at the Chinook Landing Marine Park on the Columbia River. And
we have on the list Director Willis, and then Ted Hughes will bring those two up, and then the second group will be Lonnie
Dykus.
Okay, and then Andre Wong. So with Director Willis and I don't see Ted Hughes here, though.
He's just outside on the bench.
Okay. Jim, could you get Ted Hughes, please? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. My written testimony is before you, so I will simply say that to bring the USS Ranger to Portland and moor it at the Marine Park there at Fairview would create the largest floating museum of its type in the world. It also has the ability to function as an emergency operations center. It is a wonderful piece of American naval history that would also attract tourists. It would attract conventions. It would attract young people who could come and learn of our history, given the fact that the Ranger served from, I believe, 1957 until its decommissioning in 1993. It's one of the most decorated ships in the entire United States Navy, in fact, in the history of the United States Navy. I certainly, as a native Oregonian and as a veteran, would love to see this piece of American history come to Oregon and be placed in a place of honor in our state. It's easily accessible from the freeway. In fact, I think, given its size, it will be viewable from the freeway. I think that a good many people will benefit greatly from having this wonderful ship come to Oregon. I urge your favorable consideration of SCR 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Willis. Ted Hughes?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ted Hughes, and I do not have a dog in this fight, but I used to. 2 years ago, a group of Ranger veterans invited me to come to a meeting at Spirit Mountain and tell them how to get through the political maze to get this done. When I arrived at Spirit Mountain, I was stunned. Out of 200 ex-veterans that served on the Ranger just blew me away, and their families. And so we had a great 2 days and a great planning session on what to do. At that time, they were focusing on the Port of Portland. And the Port of Portland didn't want to give up one of their peers. They don't know the kinds of money they could make by doing that. So we decided then maybe we would go to the city of Portland. I went to Commissioner Randy Leonard, and he was all excited about it. And we were going to move in the city of Portland until this particular location was noticed, and I understand it's Metro. And Metro is going to make a lot of money by lending their pier here. These are financial giants. They are tourist attractions. I hope I'm wrong when I say this, but my inclination is that you will be, by endorsing this, responsible for one of the biggest economic development programs in the state of Oregon. That's how I feel about it. I really got turned on this thing. It has a working hospital. It has everything, and I'm really excited about the Ranger, and I hope we keep it in Oregon. When I was involved for that short period of time, there was other areas of the country that wanted this ranger. And fortunately, the volunteers and the people who worked on it were able to delay and delay and delay until Oregon found a home for it. So I couldn't be more enthusiastic about endorsing it, and it's right out there where it belongs. It's a great location. So that's all I had to say. I'm doing it because I believe in it. How different is that for a lobbyist, huh?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions?
Comment.
I heard him first.
Did anybody sense Mr. Hughes' enthusiasm? Or was
Well, I was expecting a story.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ted. And Jim, where'd he go? Or back in the back. This is not the first time we've heard about the Ranger, and I am really happy that it's coming to fruition this time around and that we did find a home for it. Very timely, because had Oregon been struck like Japan was in this latest emergency, and will be at some point in the near future, although I'd love to have a bill that would prohibit Cascadia from occurring, but that's not going to happen. The Ranger would be a very good place for up to, 20,000 people to be able to live on board if they're displaced. It's a ship, so it can rock and roll in the water. It has all, as you heard from Ted, it has all the amenities that are needed to create a small town, and actually a big town for me, because most of my towns are less than 20,000. So this is a real asset for Oregon to have, and especially in the metro area, because if we do have an emergency, it will be a great place to hold a lot of people in a quick time. So I hope you'll all support this 100%.
Thank you, Representative.
Make it mandatory if you can.
And by the way, this ship, I believe, with probably squadrons and full increments, forestall class, probably had around 5,000 men, give or take, with full increment of squadrons, and it was literally a city, and I mean literally a city. There's probably 16, 18 stories underwater.
Wow.
So, trust me, I've been lost on them before.
It's about 15 stories high and about 3 football fields long.
Yeah, they're about 1,250 feet long on the flight deck.
And if I may, just briefly, Portland and, you know, that area enjoys a lot of conferences, conventions, and everything. And often in a convention setting, the agenda and, you know, people are in meetings all the time, the people who have to be there, but they bring their families, and this would be a great thing to bring your family to visit. I mean, I'm sure they'd have little restaurants and coffee. Look, they could put a Starbucks on it.
How about a McDonald's?
Nah, just a Starbucks. They have to eat in Navy food.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee.
Next group is Mr. Wang and Mr. Let's see, that's his
Dykus,
right?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Andre Wang. I am legal counsel for the Ranger USS Ranger Foundation. I am joined here with Lonnie Dykus, who is the senior project advisor for the foundation. We are here to give you kind of a progress update on the USS Ranger project, and we'll have take a few minutes to go through a visual presentation to give you the latest information and take a few minutes to answer your questions. We'll give you the basics. We are here to site a Forrestal class aircraft carrier on the Columbia River at Chinook Landing in Fairview, Oregon. This is by no means just a small sailboat. I mean, this is a ship that is over 1,000 feet long, that can, as Chair Esquivel mentioned, can house up to 5,000 people, and I'm proud to say that this no longer is a project in embryo. This is a full gestating baby at this point. And so as we go through this, I'll turn it over to Lonnie to give you the basics of the project.
Thank you, Chair, Co-Chairs. It really is a privilege for us, the Ranger, to be here, and I want to thank you so much and your generosity for your time here. We've got a dozen slides. I'm going to run through these pretty quickly to make sure you have time for your questions and what other comments you may have. So we'll be about our business here. The mission of the Ranger Foundation, as you can read up here, is the dedication of preserving the ship, the Ranger, but most importantly, it's about a community heritage project. And that's real important because we have just been really blessed with the kind of support and enthusiasm we have for the project, and I appreciate so much the folks getting up here before us and talking about their support for the bill here. But this foundation has really made an effort to really connect with our community and our region to get the support for the project and make sure it represents whatever our community wants. So we're doing that through both certainly public and private partnerships. The history of the Ranger is quite a gust. The first Ranger was commanded, as you can see, by John Paul Jones. And there's been seven Rangers that followed, and the current iteration, one that we have that we're talking about, is CV-61. It has, as was mentioned before, quite an illustrious history. It was known as the Top Gun of the Pacific Fleet. You can see up there the life of the Ranger was from 1957 to 93. You can see the Vietnam deployments, certainly Desert Storm activity, and just as importantly, the humanitarian work and projects that the ship did. When we look at the Ranger now, as we talked about a community heritage project, that embraces so many different things. We're talking about a memorial, a museum, civic center, educational training, emergency preparedness, and certainly economic development. And we're going to go through each of these real briefly, and as I said before, we're going to be about our business and get through these quickly for you. A memorial. And do you want to talk a little bit about memorials? And
Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. We want to emphasize that this is going to be more than just a floating museum on the Columbia. We, first of all, since this is an asset of the U.S. military, this has to be a tribute and an homage to our veterans and those who have served. And so this isn't just going to be more than just a novel, cool thing, but really a place of solemnity and respect to those who have served and do serve. Now, the area that we're speaking of is actually perfect because there is quite a I guess a colony of veterans that do find East County home. So it seems to be appropriate to have it there on in Fairview, Oregon, where we're looking.
You know, I've had the pleasure to sit through a couple of these meetings now, both here in the Senate, and there's been a lot of bills and a lot of discussion about the reintegration of our veterans. Certainly this would be a facility to help make that happen and be a resource to all the veterans. So we want to make sure we really underscore that fact. This is a resource for all veterans. The very typical thing for these ships, there's five of these ships around the country. Certainly the folks, many folks are familiar with the Intrepid in New York, and certainly the ship in San Diego. Museum is a very typical kind of application for these. This would, as was mentioned earlier, this would be the largest floating museum in the world. It's got quite a rich history with it, but just we would expect the foundation has already had discussions with other museums in the area so we could have relationships, so we could display military displays and other kind of patriotic displays as well. It certainly could be a recreational center. Briefly was touched on the economic impact, and we'll certainly talk about that in more detail, but certainly as a movie prop and recreational center as well. Community and Civic Center, what's your...
Oh, yes. Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, we are also looking to have this ship be a place for gathering, a community center, a civic center. This would be a location in East Multnomah County that could be a site for conventions, for gatherings. No longer will residents have to look west for large gatherings. The bay itself that housed the aircraft can hold, I understand, up to 2,000 to 3,000.
You could have a dinner for 3,500 of your closest friends.
There you go. So this is a multi-functioning, multi-purpose project where we are We're looking to have this be more than just the museum itself, but also to utilize the self-sustaining, self-contained features that the aircraft carrier always has.
We have made a significant effort, as I mentioned before, about making sure that we connect with our committee, with our communities. Just this last weekend, we were meeting with the Fairview City Council, talking about the project and, you know, dimensions of the project and how it might be developed. We're hosting the Gresham Chamber this coming Friday for a meeting to talk about the project. So we're continually going back to our communities and reconnecting with those communities to get their support. Certainly, there's an educational and training component to this. We've also talked to some of our surrounding educational facilities, and that is educational opportunities in terms of just providing a physical asset, just a place. As some of you may know, on board those ships, they really are, I think, as Co-Chair Esquivel rightly pointed out, these really are small cities. So they have schools. There's a number of classrooms and classroom space and teaching facilities available on the ship that we certainly, and this project would make available to the surrounding schools and school districts, and that's certainly K-12, community colleges, pardon me, and universities. There are shops. There's all kinds of machine shops on board that certainly would provide technical school capability as well, communications as well. So it really provides a true learning environment, and as importantly, a resource that schools that are so strapped for money and resources that this would certainly be made available.
And Co-Chair Esquivel and members of the committee, we already have engaged in discussions with Dr. John Sigilski, the president of Mountain Hood Community College, to start that partnership of some sort of educational endeavor with the USS Ranger once it's on site.
Certainly another major component of this project, and I appreciate so much the kind words of Representative Boone, and that is emergency preparedness. This is not a small thing. This is a tremendous resource. We all remember the unfortunate events of 9/11, and the emergency preparedness day for that area was actually in the bottom of the basement of the World Trade Center. When that disaster occurred, the emergency preparedness center was relocated to the decks of the Intrepid, and now it has become actually a formal emergency preparedness center for the entire region. So these ships are very capable to provide that. They have tremendous communications capabilities on board, but it's the storage. It's the, as was mentioned before, they have the Ranger has a 60-bed hospital. We've already been in discussions with surrounding hospitals to create a triage center there. So it provides a triage center. It provides certainly a landing base for helicopters so they can store equipment and just a logistical center. And certainly you have, as I said, storage capabilities. They're really second to none. When the ship was placed on donation hold as soon as it was retired, and that's real important because it was preserved in such a state where, you know, you had the, it was maintained, but when they went through a decommissioning process, they cleaned all those tanks. The Ranger actually has more than 1 million gallons of storage capacity for potable water on board. So when you have the kind of disasters that's been suggested here, you certainly have a storage capability for, you know, potable water, but for triage and medical, for landing, storage of supplies, communications, and those kind of things. So it's really a tremendous asset for the entire region. In terms of economic development, it is really quite a project. We had an independent study done, the foundation did, by a consulting con, who's a nationally recognized firm that specializes in looking at projects and do evaluations. They not only determined the project was in fact feasible, but more importantly, it would have a tremendous economic impact with some fairly conservative assumptions. And tremendous impact is more than 500 jobs, direct and indirect. We're talking about an annual economic impact exceeding $46 million. One of the things that I think is so important when I've had the opportunity to speak to other groups is that, you know, when you look at this project, it accomplishes so many things. We've talked about just the emergency preparedness, the schools, the museum, the memorial. But, you know, when we start talking about economic development, you know, what is so important is that, you know, we have to remember that already the public has made substantial, you know, investment in that area. Certainly that's where Blue Lake Park is, Chinook Landing Marine Park. So the public has made those investments. When you look at mirroring this ship with those
the infrastructure that's already been put in place. It really makes a tremendous regional center. Someone mentioned earlier about they can see it from 84 when you'd be going out east. Quite frankly, I doubt you could miss it from when you're going out east on 84. I mean, this is something that you'll see from the 205 bridge. This will become a landmark, like we have those all-important landmarks in Oregon already, and it will be one of the top landmarks. My background is real estate development, and when I was involved when we were putting together the River Place project in Portland, and they talked about how that would be such a signature project and how that would really put a stamp on Portland and make a difference. I would suggest to this committee this will have an even greater impact on East County. It will be huge. We've mentioned earlier about community support.
Yes, Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, and members of the committee, this is a project that has gotten the entire community excited. One of our greatest proponent and Representative Matthews, can attest to the fact that in East Multnomah County, there are people that can disagree about everything, about where to site a casino, but the one thing that everybody's united on is this. And this has the community really excited and rallying together to hopefully have this take place by on schedule by 2015. You can see a list of the people and groups that we have already publicly signed on in support of the project of the foundation, and also just to reiterate that this museum or this. A project. What makes this different from the others, the Midway in San Diego, the Intrepid in New York, the Hornet in Alameda, and the Yorktown in Charleston, South Carolina, those are all coastal aircraft carrier sites. This one would be the first non-coast-sited aircraft carrier. It'll be on the Columbia. And so that's particularly one of the kind of the exciting and appealing things of having this this asset right there in our backyard in Fairview, Oregon, which, for those of you not familiar with geography, we're talking about 8.5-9 miles east of the Portland Airport there along Marine Drive.
So we talked about the project being sited in Chinook Landing Marine Park. One of the things I did want to certainly talk about and mention was the project costs. We're looking to raise the money predominantly through private means. The project costs are currently estimated at $15 million. You can see up there on the screen, we talk about evaluation, certainly site development, relocation. As we get farther through the process, we'll have a better fix on those project costs, but these are our preliminary estimates to do this project. Here is our schedule that we're now working with. We've obtained a site approval through Metro, and we've notified the Navy of that. I'm actually managing the Navy donation process. We've been in regular contact with the Navy. They've actually given us more time to put together all the various project elements. They've been very supportive and very willing to work with us. You can certainly see up there the ship and refit and repair time frame, the site development we've got to do, and then it's our hope to have the gates open by the end of 2015. That concludes our presentation. We'll be certainly happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Mr. Dykus for coming with his presentation today. And we met several months ago, about a year ago probably, with Shannon Chisholm. And it's come a long way, so thank you very much for your dedication. I also want to say thanks to Andre Wang. He's a constituent of mine and has become a good friend. And I don't know how many folks in this building can actually look at someone that was running, opposing their seat and ran in the campaign together, but this is a man of great integrity and honor, and I'm just proud to call him a friend. And I've just got to say that I had the good fortune of having him as an opponent in a race, and I appreciate it, Andre. And it's great to see you doing this work. I had the opportunity when I was in San Diego to visit the USS Midway, and I took my family, and when we're down at the Midway, I'm standing outside, and I have a picture on my laptop right here, and Representative Huffman can attest it's a rather large ship. I took that opportunity to call Shannon Chisholm, and I said, "Shannon, it's Greg. I'm standing outside the USS Midway, and I'm just curious, what's the size of the Ranger in comparison to the Midway?" And she said, "The Ranger's a lot bigger." And that is when I realized that what we're going to have out there in East Multnomah County and what it could bring to the city and to our community. the jobs that it has, the events it can host, the reintegration for our veterans, the facilities that it allows, classroom teaching, Dr. Ski with the college and what you've done there. Mm-hmm. So I am very excited and very energetic to see this happen, and so excited that it's coming to Fairview. And Mr. Chair, I would say that if it's at all possible, that we have them kind of come back to report to us as things progress, because there are some issues that I'm just dying to hear about, and that is basically how you get that from point A to point B and land that thing in Fairview. But it's going to be great, and both you guys were here last week. We didn't get you in. You came back this week. But thanks for your dedication to the project. Thanks for all you're doing, and I'm looking forward to walking this ship with you.
Thank you. Anything else? I would like to say this intrigues me on being a emergency situation, that it, should it ever arise. Are you going to have fuel? Because if you have fuel, you could fire the boilers, which in turn you could generate anything you want, including making a fresh water. You could feed 15,000 meals a day. You could have a laundry capability of 5,000 to 7,000 people. It would be a great emergency preparedness.
The typical approach has been with these projects where the Navy puts these on up for donation, they actually go through and they remove all the liquids from the ship. They actually disable the main steam plant and engines to operate the ship. Certainly they leave the emergency power generators on the ship, and that's been a typical approach. I would just suggest to you, co-chair, that this is not a typical project. When you look at all the other ships that have been that are on for display now, those have typically just been museum memorials. And it was only kind of just the unfortunate happenstance that happened in New York City that caused the Intrepid to create an emergency center there. We're a very different kind of project. We're very community-based. Embrace the community, get all those community functions about the schools and educational opportunities and really make it, you know, something that, you know, a civic center that the entire community can embrace, as well as the museum and memorial. We are planning from the very beginning to have it for emergency preparedness. So, Mr. Chairman, we would certainly want to be working with the Navy to see how we can expand that possibility, as you suggest, because I think that is a tremendous capability, that ship, and I don't know why we wouldn't press for that. So I am totally aligned, and I think the foundation is as well, that we want to press the Navy to do as much and make this as true an opportunity and a support capability there for our region as we can.
Any other questions or comments? I want to thank both of you and everyone that's testified on this. I was on board the Ranger back in my younger days when I was in maintenance support package off the Quay Wall in San Diego. So we did the MSP, which was the capacitors and anything electrical back in those days when it was crude. We almost had tubes in those days, you know. But that four-stall class carrier is a nice-looking carrier.
Correct.
And it does provide a great opportunity for us to have an emergency situation where we can take care of 5,000 to 10,000 people.
That's right.
Very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on SCR 1 unless anyone else want to. Real quick,
yep.
Mike. Because I have Representative Hunt here.
For the record, Mike Sullivan, I'm the Oregon Director for AWPPW. I spent over 4 years in the Navy on two aircraft carriers, 22 months at sea. And everyone ought to see flight ops because utterly amazing. And they could do that on this ship because prop jobs can take off and be recovered. It wouldn't take that much steam to get the cats up to land them. And I see a big fundraiser. I think people would pay $100 a pop just to see that. Because I guarantee it's going to scare the living bejesus out of you when you see these things come in, even if it's a prop job. I've seen training videos where the guy who takes the retaining wire off the hook of the plane get decapitated. I mean, the guy runs out with a football helmet on it. That's it. I mean, you got to be 18 and crazy. And I I'd like to say, during Vietnam, I went to the Mediterranean, but we flew as many sorties, flights, as they did in Vietnam. We didn't have the payload, but that's how alert and ready we were. Everyone should see an aircraft carrier. It's 90 feet tall around. So my first training film was, I can't swim too well, was they show a typhoon. And the wave goes over the top of the aircraft carrier flight deck, and that was it for me. I about quit. But that's all. I think it's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, if you ever break out of the cloud cover about 2,000 feet in a storm and look at a carrier and you're going to land on it, you think, you know how big they are, but when you look down there and it looks like a stamp in a bathtub, you go, holy cow, I'm going to land on this thing. So, anyway, thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on SCR1. Now, I will open a public hearing on, let's see, House Bill 2848. Would you read the bill, please?
House Bill 2848 creates a medal for the next of kin of Oregon service members killed in action or as a result of wounds received in action while serving in Iraq or Afghanistan. There is a -3 amendment that is proposed to name the award or the honor Oregon Legion of Honor Award.
Okay. I have a list. Representative Hunt, will you please?
This is the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Nice, thank you. Nice to be back in the Veterans Affairs Committee, where I had the privilege of serving in during its inaugural session in 2005 after 50 years of absence. So thank you all for continuing that tradition, honoring our veterans and service members. You should, Mr. Chair, for the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. Sorry about that. You should have in front of you a -4 amendment, which has the identical language that the committee administrator just read, but in line 6, the actual proposed name would be the Oregon Legion of Merit Award. Excuse me, the Oregon Legion of Merit Award. The rest is exactly as the committee administrator described. You can see several of you have co-sponsored this bill. It really is an opportunity, I think, for us to recognize a particular class of Oregonians who have paid the ultimate sacrifice, have either been killed in action or who died as a direct result of their wounds in Iraq or in Afghanistan, an opportunity for us to in one tangible way. I know you all are working on other specific tangible ways, but in one with one specific honor to honor them and to present this award to their next of kin. And I think you'll hear from Director Willis and General Caldwell and Mr. McDonald in support of this, but would appreciate your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions, comments, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hunt, I just wanted to thank you for your willingness to change the name because I really wanted to be supportive of the concept, and so I really do appreciate that you did that, and I can be on board.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. Appreciate that.
Any other questions or comments? I want to thank you as well, Representative, because we've worked on this a little bit with your office and my office, and I think that the intent of the bill is gracious, to say the least.
Thank you.
Next up will be Jim Willis, Mac McDonald, and General Caldwell. And the General's lost.
Oh, Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Jim Willis, the Director of Veterans Affairs. And by proxy, I've been given the permission to speak for General Caldwell, who has been called to another hearing. So this is a great opportunity for me. I'm trying to figure out how I can get my hands on one of those armories. For the record, I'm here today to support House Bill 2848. Clearly, there's no more devastating loss to any family than to lose a member in combat. They always worry about the separation of their loved one, and then they get that knock on the door. Since the beginning of the conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, Oregon has done all it can to support its Gold Star families. House Bill 2848 is just one more way that we can wrap our collective arms around these families during their time of loss. I know there are amendments to this bill, and I support them simply because the word Oregon comes in front of the name of the medal. That, in my view, separates it from any Department of Defense medal or any other decoration by either our country or any other country. I'd like to thank Representative Hunt for sponsoring this bill and for all the co-sponsors who have signed on. I have been to well over 100 military memorial services in this state, and currently we've lost 127 in the current conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq. I can tell you that anything that is tangible, anything that someone can put in their hands to help them remember their loved one, is very much appreciated. Whether it is a coin, whether it is a flag, whether it is a parchment paper of some kind, this medal will be extremely meaningful to these families because this doesn't come from the unit they were with. It doesn't come from the United States government. It comes from their state and from this body, and usually presented either by a military officer from this state or from this state or this state's governor or a member of this body. So I very much appreciate what you're doing here today, and thank you very much.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon. I support the bill. I kind of question the title. Legion of Honor, because Legion of Honor, when I think of that, I think of France, and France has a Legion of Honor. I think, basically, Oregon has to be in front of it. Oregon Honor Medal would be, I think, the most appropriate name for it, but I heartily support it and long overdue. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thanks, Mac. The Dash 4 Amendments renames it to the Oregon Legion of Merit Award.
I would not like to see that. I have a Legion of Merit from the United States government with a combat V in it, and people might get that mixed up. I just don't think that would be really appropriate. I think the Oregon Honor Medal would be much more appropriate.
Well, the reason we've gone away from the honor part of it is because we do not want to get even close to the Medal of Honor.
Well, Legion of Merit, you're getting into an award that's given primarily for people in the armed forces and it for doing an outstanding job. And I think some people might mix it up, even if you have the word Oregon in front of it. And I really don't think they're going to mix up Oregon Honor Medal with the Medal of Honor. But that's just my personal opinion.
Sure. Thanks, Mac. Any questions, comments? Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I really apologize for this. I may not have made it clear that General Caldwell also wanted to say that he was in favor of this bill.
I thought General Caldwell was going to be silent on this issue.
Oh, no. No, he was vociferous when he asked me to come up here and say that he was okay with the bill. And he did. He said that. He'll be back and you can ask him, but he did say that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Willis.
You bet.
Anyone else wanting to comment or testify on House Bill 2848? If not, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2848. We do not have a fiscal on that, so when we get it back, then we'll go forward. Okay, I would like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3163. Would you read the bill, please?
House Bill 3163 recognizes the validity of a written instrument commonly used in the armed forces for the directed disposition of a decedent's remains.
Mark San Suu Kyi, is that correct?
Hi, Mr. Co-Chair.
I wasn't close.
Mark San Suu Kyi.
Oh, I was
Department of Defense Regional Liaison for Military Families for the Northwest, including Oregon.
San Suu Kyi?
San Suu Kyi, yes, sir, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you for considering this bill. I want to say up front that I appreciate seeing all the levity here. It's much nicer here than in Olympia, where there's not as much levity. I happen to be sitting up there most of my time, so appreciate that. The handout I pass out to you is my way of explaining what this is about. If you disregard the map for a second, that form is a DD-93. It's an emergency data form that every military person, active reserve, even Coast Guard, executes on an annual basis, and especially before they get deployed. And the problem that's bubbled up nationwide, and as the Department of Defense guy here, we're asking the states to consider is that on that page 2 or 3, where there's a little box where the person designates who they want to dispose of their remains. The person they pick, they are limited by federal law to choosing surviving spouse, blood relative, or adopted relative. And that's 10 U.S. code, and that's what's on the form. It's a federal form. What's been happening in different places is that, let's just say an army guy is estranged from his wife. Things are not going really well, and he says, you know what, if I get blown up in Afghanistan, I want my brother to handle my remains to be cremated and brought back to Oregon or wherever. Different state laws are disconnected from this form, and in some states, even though that person wants the brother to do this, the state law, state statute defaults to surviving spouse. And so in different states, there have been a lot of strife for families already dealing with tragedy by losing someone, and then the form designating the brother, but state law saying, no, it's the surviving spouse, and then there's battles civilly over how to deal with that person's remains. There have been issues about burial versus cremation, or whether the remains are going to be in this state or that state, and so those things have bubbled up nationwide to the point where this has become, for the Defense State Liaison Office, who I represent, one of our top 10 key issues for military families, quality of life issues. And again, this can happen. That form can be a reservist crossing the street in Salem who gets hit by a car. That form is honored as to the remains. So the bill really only has about 4 lines in it. And it's the one that just says a written instrument recognized by the Armed Forces of the United States as that term is defined. It's paragraph 3B. If the decedent died while serving in the Armed Forces of the United States, I have been assured by your counsel who writes this bill that this insertion will protect any Oregonians from this happening to them. Those 127 people you just heard about, conceivably any of those people who will deserve that medal you're just talking about in the bill preceding this one could in fact be in this quandary. So this will resolve that, and we ask for your support and appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you. Any questions?
Take any questions, please.
Any comments?
The map, by the way, shows in the green are states that last year and this year so far have amended their statutes to affirm that they want to do this. Alaska governor just signed this past Saturday. He just signed it into law, so Alaska is now green. And appreciate Oregon becoming green this session, hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3163. Open a public hearing on HJM 6. Read the House Joint Memorial, please.
House Joint Memorial 6 urges Congress to require the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to pay veterans transportation costs in certain circumstances.
Have Director Willis signed up.
Chair Escoval, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here today to support HJM 6. This interim, the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Transportation worked on finding innovative ways to ensure that veterans could access their VA health care benefits. At the end of the day, the recommendations came down to either transport veterans to VA healthcare facilities or moving VA healthcare closer, closer to the veterans in their communities. I'm thrilled to report that through the efforts of Task Force Chair and ODOT Public Transportation Administrator Michael Ward, much already has been accomplished to address veteran transportation, including the following. Grants to secure wheelchair-accessible buses that can be used for veteran transportation. Agreements with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs to transfer surplus ODOT buses or vans to USDVA for veteran transportation. And pilot projects to use existing Medicaid transportation brokerage system to dispatch rides for veterans. Also, agreements with the Portland VA Medical Center to help push more health care options to veterans in their local communities so that the transportation wouldn't be necessary. And finally, agreements with the Portland VA Medical Center to schedule multiple appointments on the same day to veterans who must travel. I'm going to depart from my testimony and explain why that's so important. Years ago, when I was first doing volunteer veteran advocacy work, I often drove people from the Mid-Valley to the Portland VA Medical Center and sometimes to Vancouver, Washington for medical appointments. And I remember on more than one occasion, I would talk to the veteran about why are we going up there, and they would tell me I'm having an X-ray on my knee or I'm having my back looked at or whatever they were going up there for. And then I would find out that the veteran also was scheduled to have an X-ray on their shoulder. Only I asked him, why aren't you having the X-ray on your knee and the one on your shoulder done at the same time? And he said, well, I can't get them done at the same time. They'll only do one at a time. That seemed foolish to me then, and it does now. And so all these years later, in that last bullet that's in my testimony, I'm very pleased with the Portland VA Medical Center scheduling multiple appointments on the same day for the veterans who have to travel and who may have been seen by two different VA physicians. And yet the follow-up to their treatment can now be accomplished in one visit versus these multiple trips back up to the center. These improvements for veterans' transportation are exciting, and I believe there's more to come. However, the task force clearly recognizes that veterans' transportation should really be an issue of the federal government. VA health care is a federal benefit for our veterans, and ensuring that veterans can access the benefit regardless of geographical location should rest with the federal VA. I want to insert here also that the federal VA does interact with the disabled American veterans through their VAN program and have supported that for a good long time. The issue in our state, because of its rural-urban setting, is that we have veterans who must travel tremendous distances to seek this care, and they must be assured of adequate and timely and cost-effective transportation from their point of origin to their point of appointment and back. HJM 6 urges Congress to fund veterans' transportation. Well, that may seem like an overwhelming request. The task force final report clearly outlines how this could be done in Oregon by using the existing medical transport brokerage system to transport veterans. The system's in place to provide the transportation. Oregon just needs the money to fund the rides. And that's really what HJM 6 is urging the Congress to do by directing the VA and funding them for that very purpose. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director Willis. Any questions or statements? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I shall close the public hearing on HJM 6, House Joint Memorial 6. We do not at this time have fiscal on it, but it has a potential of maybe having one, so I'm going to close the public hearing on HJM 6. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 1 on the USS Ranger, and I will take a...
Mr. Chairman, I would move SCR 1 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Witt moves SCR 1 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? Any objections? Seeing none, so move. Representative Matthews. May I ask that you would carry that?
I'd be honored to, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Sir. Okay, I'll close. I did close it, didn't I?
Yep.
Okay, and I'll open the work session on House Bill 3205.
You want to read that?
Okay, we need to adopt the amendment on this one. House Bill 3205 creates the Oregon Veterans Business Enterprise Program to provide funding for veterans starting a new business or expanding an existing business. There is a dash one amendment and which deletes Section 2, the appropriations.
Okay, well, who submitted the dash ones?
The dash ones were the request of Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and Matt McDonald.
Okay, may I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3205 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
To adopt.
Oh, excuse me?
We haven't adopted. Mr. Chairman, if I could re-roll that one. I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3205.
Representative Witt has moved the dash one amendments as an appendage to House Bill 3205. Any objections? Any comments? Seeing none, so moved. I'll entertain.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3205 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wood, I believe it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but let's call time out here
no
because
festival.
It's my understanding that there is a $250,000 appropriation on this bill. But it's also my understanding that we would try to do that in different means without any fiscal impact, correct? So do we have a waiver to take it?
We have a, it says there'll be administrative cost to administer the program, including, it sounds like it'd be.
So do we have a?
We have a fiscal impact, but all it says is there'll be administrative cost to administer the program.
Okay, so. I think we still have to take Ways and Means then, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we, Brad? I would think so.
Because
if we have a fiscal impact on staff, we need to know that.
Yeah, I didn't think we had to, but.
Mr. Mann, could you come up and talk to us about this, because it's my understanding we didn't have a fiscal. Now it's saying we have a fiscal.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
we're like a covey of quail here. We're ready to scatter.
For the record, my name is Tom Mann with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Let me back up and tell you what happens. When fiscal contacts an agency and asks for a fiscal, we have to tell them if there's an administrative cost or not, and usually we'll have a minimal fiscal appointed for an administrative cost. The Dash 1 amendment eliminated the $250,000 fiscal because it eliminated that from the bill. But the agency still had to say there would be a minimal fiscal just to administer a program when the program starts. So I think that's what your fiscal says.
SOP?
SOP.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mann. I appreciate that. I stand corrected. We'll take this to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Okay. As moved by Representative Witt, any statements, any questions? Nothing? This is too easy, folks. Any objection? Okay, seeing none, we will move House Bill 3205 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Close the public hearing. So adopted. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3205. We need a carrier for that. Who would like to do that?
I'll do it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Witt, thank you. Okay, I'll open a work session on House Bill 3206. Please read the.
House Bill 3206 increases the tax credit for TRICARE providers from $1,000 to $5,000.
Okay, House Bill 3206
has a subsequent referral to waste to tax credits, so I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3206 to the House floor with a subsequent referral to tax credits. That's what committee.
Representative Witt has moved House Bill 3206 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to tax credit committee. Any discussion? Any questions? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3206. Open up a work session on House Bill 3248. Read the bill.
House Bill 3248 grants tax credit to members of the Oregon National Guard or military reservist on active duty and deployed outside the United States for Internet service. It applies to tax years beginning in 2012, and this also has a subsequent referral to tax credits.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move this one.
Okay. Representative Parrish moves it to the House floor. Go ahead. Finish it up.
Well, yeah, okay. So,
with a subsequent referral
to tax credits, but with a due pass recommendation. So.
Okay. Representative Parrish moves House Bill 3248 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to tax credit committee. Any discussion?
It's a great bill.
Any comment? Are you on the bill?
That's just a great bill.
You're on the bill. I will say again, I will happily, I've got priority bills left, I will happily use one to let those folks in tax credits know that they will be paying for their internet and having their communications on the House floor, and we'll take away their cell phone at the door so that they get a really good sense of what it feels like to be away from your loved ones. So I'll be happy to make sure that message gets driven home.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3248. Open up a work session on House Bill 3391.
House Bill 3391 creates a task force on military families. It directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Oregon Military Department to provide staff support to the task force. It has an emergency clause effective on passage. It does have a fiscal impact statement, and so I...
Okay, this one would have to have a referral to Ways and Means because there is a $10,000 fiscal on it due to purchase of 5,000 brochures. So, anyway, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3391 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to House Ways and to Ways and Means.
Chair Witt moves House Bill 3391 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any questions?
Mr. Chair, just a quick, maybe I missed something, but 10,000, is it any amount goes to Ways and Means?
That's my understanding.
50 cents.
Okay. At this point.
50 cents.
Oh, okay.
Used to be 50,000, remember?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, but times are tough now.
Okay.
So,
pay as you go.
So, any other question? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Close the work session on House Bill 3391. Anything for the cause? Any discussion? Cool. Director Willis.
Thank you, Chair Escoval. Members of the committee, it occurs to me that I need to make an informational statement to you specifically with regard to the Oregon Veterans Business Enterprise Program and subsequently the Oregon Veterans Business Repair Program. This body passed the Oregon Veterans Business Repair Program in response to the fact that a number of our members, both in the active reserve and National Guard, were being deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq. They owned small businesses, and well, they were gone because they were such a small business. Mm-hmm. They needed some capital to get the business started up again after being gone anywhere from 12 to 15 months. That's why this body, a couple sessions ago, and some of you were playing a role in that, passed the Oregon Business Repair Loan program. However, that program does not allow for a veteran to begin a business, which is what is envisioned by the Oregon Veterans Business Enterprise Program. Neither of these programs currently have any funding, and I understand the fiscal challenges our state is facing, but by having them in statute, and especially this latest one, it allows us to go to sources of funding to recapitalize these two important programs, and that's exactly what our intention to do is as soon as this makes it through the session. There are programs through the Department of Labor Vets program. There are other programs through the United States Department of Veterans Affairs Business Enterprise programs, and it is a competitive grant. I believe Oregon can be as competitive as anybody else, especially using the Fort Oregon model, in that we have no support from any large active duty bases. So what you've done today is to give us another tool in our toolbox that allows us to go forward both for the business repair and for the startup in a business enterprise, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Willis. Anything for the good of the cause?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just briefly, I attended a meeting the other day on the World War II Memorial. And we have a bill, as you know, that I think is probably several people have signed on to and we haven't heard yet, but regarding the task force, which is necessary to codify what we're doing. But I got to say, the presentation was just amazing. And what we'll have a chance to be a part of is, putting forward the task force from these seats and assisting them in creating this incredible monument, 33 feet high, five-sided marble, just absolutely incredible. And you'll just be amazed at what they're going to be able to do. And I'm excited about the progress they're making. I'm excited about the group that's been involved. It's a lot of great folks that are doing the work, and I appreciate Mr. Willis, Mr. Mann. Thank you very much for having me a part of that group. But it was great. So I'm excited about that bill coming forward to get that task force into statute. Working with the Parks Division, too. Good news is we won't need the -1 amendments any longer. We can move forward with the bill as written, and we can get this thing hit the ground running. So, again, I appreciate all the work that they're doing on that, and I look forward to being part of the group that gets that done.
Thank you, Representative. Anything else for the good of the cause?
Nothing from my end, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you all. Let's adjourn.
Thank you.